Chapter 4. Jonathan saves Daniel. Strelsky landed the plane on a small airfield that had cows on one side. Around them lay the brown fields of Louisiana. He jumped out of the plane and, with gun in hand, walked towards a small building. Burr followed him with empty hands. He hated guns and did not know how to use them.
"I've told him that you're a doctor," Strelsky said. "He doesn't know our names."
The building smelled bad and it was full of rubbish. The two men sat down and waited. Half an hour passed. It was hot and their clothes were wet. Then, suddenly, the door opened and a large man walked in wearing expensive black clothes and a gold necklace. Burr looked at Dr. Paul Apostol.
"This is the man who brought us information about Roper's plan," he thought. "He eats with Roper and sails with him, and then he sells Roper to us."
"Meet the doctor from England," Strelsky said, and pointed to Burr.
"Hello, doctor," said Apostol. "I love your great country. It is good to meet someone who has been to university, a gentleman."
Strelsky began to ask Apostol questions. Did anyone know he was at this meeting? What time did he have to leave? When could they meet again? Then he began asking the important questions.
"Are the cartels still buying the helicopters, Dr. Apostol?"
"I am not in the room when they talk about things like that," Apostol replied. "But Mr. Roper will sell them helicopters if that's his plan."
Then he told them about different people and places, and money that was coming into the Caribbean, and the cartel's plan for a new building in Miami. Then Burr asked him another question.
"What's Roper's secret? What does he have that the Israelis and Cubans don't have? Why are the cartels buying arms from him and not them?"
Apostol did not have a problem answering this.
"You must understand that Mr. Roper is not an ordinary man," he said. "He is charming and confident, and he has big plans. He is a gentleman."
"And of course you've stayed with him in his beautiful houses," thought Burr. "He gave you good food and beautiful things, and you liked him because he is English and a gentleman."
"Then Mr. Roper told us about the newest and best guns and missiles," continued Apostol. "He said that our boys were brave and good and they should be protected. And he told us that we could forget sending poor people to other countries to sell drugs or flying small planes across Mexico to the US. He could organize something better, an easy exchange that could take our drugs into all of Europe."
"You mean he's going to sell mountains of drugs across Europe and kill children and make millions of dollars from it?" shouted Strelsky.
Apostol did not answer the question. Instead, he said,
"Mr. Roper said that he would pay for the whole deal. We don't have to pay anything. We just give him the drugs and he gives us the arms. The cartels liked this idea and they trust him."
"And was Major Corcoran at this meeting?" asked Burr.
"Of course," replied Apostol. "So was Lord Langbourne. Major Corcoran signed all the papers. But I have told the cartels what your agents told me to tell them." "And what is that?" asked Burr.
"That Mr. Corcoran drinks and takes drugs, has a difficult love life, and cannot be trusted. But I don't understand why. If Mr. Roper does not want to use Corcoran anymore, then he will just find another signer."
"Does Mr. Roper know yet that the cartels are not happy with Major Corcoran?" asked Burr.
"I don't know," replied Apostol. "The cartels don't tell me their thoughts."
Then Burr passed him an envelope. "This is a list of all the bad things Corcoran did before he met Roper," he said. "They include drink driving, drug taking, and stealing money when he was in the army. Please give this extra information to the cartels for us."
After leaving Cornwall on his motorbike, Jonathan drove straight to Bristol and got a job on a ship as a chef. He sailed to Canada on the ship, sleeping in the hold and working long hours. When he got to Canada, he immediately travelled to a town called Espérance in Quebec and found the hotel that Burr had told him about. The woman who owned the Chateau Babette, Madame La Tulipe, was as strange as Burr had said. Jonathan told her he was Jacques Beauregard from Switzerland and that he had lost his passport and could not get work. She agreed to give him a job cooking in the hotel kitchen and to let him stay in one of the hotel rooms. She did not think about her daughter, Yvonne, who was sleeping two doors away from him. Jonathan worked for 10 weeks at Chateau Babette and secretly started meeting with Yvonne. They kept it secret because Yvonne's father did not like Jonathan, and because she already had a boyfriend, Thomas Lamont, who was a good friend of her father's. Jonathan learned with interest from Yvonne that Thomas had never had a passport. Then Yvonne's father learned about the two of them and punched Jonathan in the face. The next day, Jonathan left the hotel, but he already had a passport in the name of Thomas Lamont in his pocket. He got a job on another ship, and he sailed from Canada to the Bahamas and Hunter's Island. Richard Roper's boat, the Pasha, appeared at the east side of Hunter's Island at 6 p.m. The staff at Mama Lowe's restaurant, where Jonathan now worked, were ready for it. Someone had telephoned from the Pasha that morning and booked a table for 16 in the name of Roper. Jonathan thought about the plan that he had made with Rook, who Burr had sent to meet him in the Bahamas. He had waited for the Pasha all week, but still, when he saw it sailing towards the island, he felt strange and a little frightened. For a second, he thought about running away to the island's only town. Then Mama Lo shouted at him to get himself to work right now, and he smiled to himself and felt better. He began walking quickly towards the kitchen. An hour later, Roper and his friends were sitting around a large table on the restaurant terrace. Roper was dressed in jeans and a white t-shirt, with a blue jumper thrown over his shoulders. There was loud laughing, and Jonathan turned to see the young woman, Jed, sitting opposite Roper and smiling at him. Her dress had no back, and her beautiful golden brown hair fell over her brown shoulders. With them were Lord Langbourne and his wife and their three children. Another boy sat next to Jed. He was about 8 years old and had dark hair. "He must be Roper's son, Daniel,"
thought Jonathan.
"Can't we use someone else?" he had asked Rook,
but Rook had said it would only take 5 minutes.
"What's 5 minutes?" Rook had said to Jonathan. "Roper loves that child, so we have to use him."
Frisky and Tabby were also in the group, and Major Corcoran sat next to them with a large hat on his head. A band was playing, and a man sang slowly about a girl who could not sleep. Daniel had his head on Jed's shoulder. Jonathan waited while Roper and his party ate their dinner of seafood.
"The men will come up from behind the terrace," he thought. "They'll wait behind the trees."
"Just stay near the kitchen," Rook had said.
Suddenly, there was the sound of a gun. Frisky dropped down, and Tabby told the people around the table to get down. But the two bodyguards did not know where the sound was coming from. Then Jonathan saw two tall men quietly come out of the trees and begin walking around the group. They took their money and watches and Jed's gold necklace and bracelets. Jonathan was waiting for this moment. Quickly, he ran into the kitchen and picked up a long knife. Then he ran outside again towards the terrace to see the two men pulling Daniel up the path towards him, with Roper following them.
"What do you want? Is it money?" Roper was shouting. "Why won't you talk to me?"
And then Jed shouted,
"Bring him back!"
At that, one of the men turned round and shouted,
"If any of you follow us, I'll kill the kid, okay?"
The next moment, the two men and Daniel were in front of Jonathan. Daniel was crying loudly. Jonathan stared at the men for a second, and then he screamed and punched the one with the gun. The man fell hard to the ground, and the gun flew out of his hand. Then Jonathan pushed the knife against the other man's neck.
"Run back down the path to your father," he shouted to Daniel.
"He's broken my arm," screamed the first man. "He's crazy."
But Jonathan kept the knife against the other man's neck until he saw Daniel reach Jed. At that moment, the man on the ground picked up his gun and hit Jonathan hard over the head with it. Jonathan fell, and the other man began to kick him in the head. He kicked him again and again until everything went black. When Jonathan woke up, the men were gone, and Roper's crowd were all staring down at him. He looked up and saw the faces of Tabby and Frisky, Langbourne and his children, Corcoran, Roper, Jed and Daniel. But they looked strange, like he was looking at them through water. Behind them, he could hear Mama Lo saying,
"That poor Lamont, is he okay?"
Then Roper was asking quietly,
"Why is he calling him Lamont? He's Jonathan Pine from Meister's, the man who worked for them at night. Isn't he, Tabby?"
"That's who he is, boss,"
Tabby agreed. Roper moved closer to Jonathan.
"You're going to be okay, Pine," he said quietly. "Help is coming. We'll take you to Nassau in a helicopter and take you to the best hospital. You've just saved my son's life, so you must have the best help that we can get for you."